Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Why do we feel the way we do today? It's the ultimate this or that. Is it the weather or is it the Islanders as team of the day? Marty?
Well, I got an Islanders flag on this side.
Oxford pennant.
Oxford pennant right behind me. So I will tell you it's the Islanders. The Islanders make you feel that way.
Which is so wrong. Not going to come out and pile on. Like, this team makes the playoffs a lot.
Yes.
They've made it 8 of the previous 13 years, and before stumbling down the stretch this year, had made it in 5 of the last 6. Why does everybody, present company included, why does everybody feel like they have to make jokes or pile on the New York Islanders?
Because they did it to themselves. It was the Cal Clutterbuck and Casey Cizikas and Matt Martin, who, by the way, finally, Matt Martin, he's retired. He is not going to be with the New York Islanders this year.
I think he is. Is he not hired by them?
Well, exactly. He's hired. He's not going to be on their roster, but he is part of the organization still. So you are 100% right. I just feel like with the Islanders, it was always that they got in the playoffs. Oh, they got to the conference finals again. Oh, but like there's nothing there to excite you. There's nothing there to, but they really do. Matt Barzal is one of the most fun player to watch. Like, he skates all over the place. He has no idea what he's doing on the ice half the time, or especially on the defensive side of the game. But he's fun to watch. He's got skills. They missed him last year. He only played in 30 games, so they really missed him. Mm-hmm. They got the number one overall pick in Matthew Schaefer, who may not play with them this season. Maybe he plays 9 games. Maybe he plays a whole year. Who knows what's going to happen there? They got one of the better goalie in Ilya Sorokin.
Are you emptying like all the Islander talk here in the first minute
revisit this? I'm doing the surface stuff. I'm not doing the deep dive.
You're literally doing the headlines. Like,
and they got Patrick Roy as a coach. Like, Patrick Roy should like have eyeballs on him all the time. There's always entertaining ways to present Patrick Roy as a coach, a player, whatever. But it feels like the Islanders are stuck in this rut of, right, with everybody. And so it just falls that on a day where it's been raining, it's not raining anymore for most of Western New York now, so that's good. But the Islanders kind of bring it down a little bit.
Matt Martin is special assistant to the general manager. The general manager is Matthew Darche. Allegedly, the assistant GM is still Chris Lamorello. I wasn't sure where the Lamorellos...
I
wasn't sure where the Lamorellos were at organizationally with the Islanders, because I'm looking for a picture of Lou here to have some title that I'm not familiar with, and I can't find him. Is he officially not with them, or is he still an advisor?
He is officially not with them.
Okay.
That was funny when Lou and the Islanders parted ways, and then Lou was spotted at the Buffalo airport, so they're like, oh, maybe Lou's going to be an advisor to Kevin Adams. Lou Lamoriello was having a Nexus appointment, so that's why he flew into Buffalo to go to Niagara Falls. So, but Lou's not with them anymore.
He's in the fast lane.
He is in the fast lane. He's going to do his he's going to drive to scout all year just for himself because he's a hockey lifer. His son, Chris, you mentioned, the assistant general manager and general manager of the AHL team. He hasn't had a lot of success in his career. So I feel like this is Matthew Darche's, let's rebuild this organization into a top tier, even though they've had some success. You mentioned making the playoffs, but how about going for a cup here, putting the pieces together to go for a cup? And I think that's what Matthew Darche is going to try to do, what they did in Tampa when he was there for many years.
Well, Darche has Steve Pellegrini as an assistant GM. He has Ryan Bonus as an assistant GM and director of player personnel. And, of course, the coaching staff got a bit of an overhaul because they were so terrible, and that's the only word for it, on special teams last year, 31st in both disciplines. Patrick Waugh now has Ray Bennett and Bob Bugner as assistants, that are new to the mix. Benoit Durocher is also an assistant coach there. So,
do you think the Islanders would have made the playoffs last year if it wasn't for their special teams being so bad? Because they were only 9 points out.
No. Maybe we can dissect it as the show goes on. The fact of the matter was their special teams stunk all year. And with a month left in the year, month left in the season, pardon me, they were 2 points behind Montreal.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like the special teams took a you-know-what and took them out of the mix. They were already terrible. They were already historically bad combined. Like, Marty, they're two special teams total. Don't even add up to 85%.
What?
That's not even possible.
Like an average, like you're trying to get to at least 100, right? You want a
minimum
20%
yes.
power play, 80% penalty kill, 100%.
Always.
So you're that's where you are. And if you get to 105, 110%, you're elite, elite. Mm-hmm. If you're 95 to 90%, that's rough. But if you're 80%, 85%, that's not even close to being like acceptable.
What's incredible is that they weren't the worst in either. Like you're sitting at 12.6 and they were 31st, and they were at 72.2 and they were 31st. Anyway,
That would be a good trivia question, and I know the answer, and I know you do because you probably have seen it, but you're like, who was worse than the Islanders on the power play and who was worse than the Islanders on the penalty kill? We've mentioned the Detroit Red Wings on
the
penalty kills, so Detroit
PK,
was terrible. But on the power play,
I think it was Anaheim, wasn't it?
Anaheim was, 11.8. So.
Which doesn't make any sense either based on some, you know, it never makes sense for any team to be that bad on the power play. Because every team can muster up a combination of 5 to 8 players that should know what to do on a power play. It's that simple. Like, there's no excuse for being that low. And yet, there they were.
I always feel that penalty kill is about schemes and about structure and about teaching, right? You can... this may be disrespectful to the best penalty killers that's ever played, but... the rule of thumb was always you can make somebody into a penalty killer. Like if you have a fourth line player that you're like, let's try him on the penalty kill. Like we're maybe that's some ice time for that player. As long as you're willing to block shots and really sacrifice your body. But we can teach you how to penalty kill. The power play has always been different to me. I know there's a lot that says, okay, there's structure on the power play. You got to practice the power play. For me, the power play is about skills and instincts. Knowing like where you should be, having that chemistry with somebody that you're going to, the Sedins, right? The Sedins on the power play. They knew where they were without even looking. That's the best, right? There's a chemistry to be had on the power play, the Edmonton Oilers. The skill level has to be there, but there's a chemistry. So I always feel like you don't really teach the power play. You just got to get 5 really good players and put them out there and let their skills shine. Well, I mean, if you look at the New York Islanders last year, I mean, who was really the skill? Like Barzal wasn't there. And then you end up with, you know, Anders Lee and Bo Horvat. And I feel like their skill level wasn't as high as you would want it to be for a power play to be top tier. And that's probably why they were 31st.
There's more than enough talent on that personnel. I mean, my goodness, Noah Dobson was on that team.
Yeah.
Like, and now he's not. And
he had a down year.
If you were, but it wasn't that bad.
No,
you know what
it
I mean?
Wasn't.
So
it was enough for Montreal to give up 2 first round picks to get him and Emil Lineman.
As they should. But if you were sitting here a year ago when the Islanders had made a miraculous run under Patrick Waugh to sneak in.
Yep.
But if you had said a year out after missing the playoffs, the Islanders are going to start a season without Brock Nelson for the first time since January of 2013, and they're going to be no longer employing Noah Dobson, would you honestly think that they're further along?
No. No,
but maybe that's what this hour will prove. Maybe they've made some changes to make us believe that they will tweak some of the shortcomings that you're offering. I know this instinctively. Victor Olofsson's first NHL goal was against the Islanders. Islanders are our team of the day. Victor
it was a
Olofsson
power play goal, right?
Because
he scored like 7 power play goals to start his career or something.
He's supposed to sign in Colorado. You can go to Puckpedia for all the info on that. So Victor's been moving around a little bit. The Islanders, of course. Oh, by the way, before I forget to drop this snarky little line. Oh. Has Patrick Waugh apologized to Anthony Duclair yet?
It has not been reported. It was rumored that there was going to be a conversation. But this, look, it is 2025.
It's a terrible look. Like, why even go to a press, or why answer someone in a press conference that you're going to talk to? It happened months ago. Do it then. Own it and move on. Why is this even lingering?
The whole Pete DeBoer thing with Jake Oettinger in Dallas. Like, 2 days later, I haven't even talked to Jake Oettinger yet. Like, it's 2 days later. You should. And you know you're going to be asked by the media, like, right, get it done or whatever. Like yeah, be proactive. And this was, but it is 2025. Like, these situations where coaches 20 years ago were basically ripping players a new one in press conferences, saying that player has been terrible, he's bad, and this, that, the other thing. He can't do that anymore. Or if you're going to do it, you better make sure that you have that conversation with the player beforehand and have communication. Communication is key. And it led to Anthony Duclair taking some time off afterwards and saying, I got to rethink things. And then now he should be on this roster and he should be given an opportunity to play top nine role, maybe middle six role with this organization. He still has the skating. He still has the wheels. They did add Jonathan Drouin, who, when healthy with Colorado, would perform well. But he was with his buddy Nathan MacKinnon, who they had played juniors together. Like, Jonathan Drouin with Nathan MacKinnon and Jonathan Drouin not with Nathan MacKinnon is two different things. So that's also another French-Canadian guy that Patrick Roy may rip a new one at some point this year, because I just feel like this has got potential for a nuclear explosion at some point.
Well, they added Maxim Shabanov as well out of the KHL. So perhaps, you know, in consecutive years here, they find something by going down this avenue. Obviously, Siplikov came in, maybe peaked a little early, but I think still proved himself to be an effective player for them. If Shabanov can do that as well, it adds to that middle six that you're speaking of, one that, you know, is like Matt Barzal over the last 3 years has basically missed one season in its entirety out of those three. Like, he's had, this is a lot, he's 76 games on the sidelines two of the last 3 years, right?
Yep.
And otherwise, we're talking about a guy who's around a point a game. So it's very, very, very hard to know, because you've never seen a full season of Barzal under Patrick Roy.
Yep.
You get the sense, and correct me if I'm wrong in this, but are the Islanders not still searching for a president or vice president,
aren't they looking for that anymore? Because the word was is that they maybe were going to employ Brendan Shanahan.
There were a lot of names out there, huge names.
Yeah, and that Darche was going to be the GM, but then they hired Darche as the GM, and it's like, well, where are we going to find a president of hockey operations now when we've already hired a GM?
I don't think the two go hand. Honestly, I don't think they're married that way. One's hockey and one is. The reason I go down this path is I think the Islanders are turning a corner organizationally to try to do things differently and keep. Look, they have a super hardcore fan base, and that's been entrenched for 50 years.
Great fans.
Right. And they just need to, you're in an amazing market in New York. And I was just starting to feel like, hey, like maybe they're going to turn a corner here. And so we'll see how it goes, whether that does.
And I think the number one overall pick we know here in Buffalo, it brings the fans in. It brings the fans in. So you got to respond to that. Mm-hmm. Look, I don't know if Matthew Schaefer is going to play all season, a game or not. Like right now, I look at their defense and I could see, you know, they signed Tony D'Angelo. So it's like, okay.
No, he was already there.
Well, yeah, but he was already there, but he's now I look at him and he's maybe a top 4D, you know, maybe even a top 2D because Noah Dobson left. Like, you're looking Romanov. You got Pollock and Pelech are probably your 1 and 2. Romanov is probably 3, like D'Angelo. But if you're going to have your number one overall pick in Matthew Schaefer.
Romanov is 1, dude.
Yeah, I'm starting saying as a pair, like who's
okay, but
who's
he's starting an 8-year deal at 6.25. There's no one close. Like, he is clearly the guy right now until Schaefer gets his legs.
But Romanov and Dobson was clearly your number one pair, and now it's Romanov and who, right? You're like, who's there with
yeah.
him? So you're like Schaefer? Okay, let's.
I think Schaefer's going to stick. I could be way, way, way off.
I think he's going to stick because for me, two things. One, the word was that if Matthew Schaefer was to go back to the OHL, it probably wouldn't be with the Erie Otters. That they probably would look to have him go to another organization and have him like have a lot of success and compete for Memorial Cup and all of that. So that was number one. Mm-hmm. Number two, there was word that, okay, well, if Matthew Schaefer is going to not play in Long Island, why wouldn't he go maybe the college route? Do what, you know, others have done now and gone the college route. But if you're doing that, you're not going to training camp and you can't play any games. So, and he hasn't done that, right? Because the colleges have already started their school year or close to, he's not doing that. So to me, it seems like the Islanders are saying, you're going to be with us at the start of the year, at least for 9 games, and then we'll make a decision. Because if not, he probably would have gone and gotten $500,000, maybe even $1 million to be playing college hockey somewhere on a big school.
Mm-hmm. I feel like you've used that 9-game window a lot with Schaefer. And I don't believe you think he's going to stick beyond that. Am I wrong?
I think it's going to be how he looks. This is a player that didn't play a lot last year.
Right.
You know, broke his collarbone at the World Juniors and ran into the post. the nets are always there, Matthew. You got to go around
them.
Oh,
this is amazing. David Riddick's there.
David Riddick, He pulled at David Riddick. David Riddick did not get hurt on that play. Matthew Schaefer did, but he didn't play a lot last year.
Yeah.
So he's coming back an injury. Like, how is that going to affect him? Mm-hmm. Right? Like, you have guys like Gavin McKenna who decided to go to Penn State, make a lot of money. I'm like, for me, if the Islanders were expecting Matthew Schaefer not to be there to start the season, more decisions would have been made for his future. That hasn't happened yet. So 9 games and we'll see. But it will be about the 9 games because he hasn't played a lot of hockey last year to know where he really is at going into this, his first year pro.
80 points for Matt Barzal over under.
I'm going to say if he plays at least 70 games over. So that's the thing. Like, but last year, even though he played 30 games, he didn't perform at a point of game pace.
Right.
He was 20 points in 30 games. There was something clearly wrong with him. Mm-hmm. Didn't go well. And then they shut it down. I think Barzal should be, for this team to be successful, 80 points and more. But last year, there's scoring leader was Bo Horvat with 57 points. That right. has shades of Miroslav Shetan with the Sabres late 90s. Mm-hmm. He would lead the team with 52 points, but you had Dominik Hasek, which didn't matter.
Yeah, and Bo was close to 30 goals, right?
Yeah, well, he was 28 goals. Anders Lee was 29, so they didn't have a 30-goal scorer.
They had Simon Holmstrom move up to become a 20-goal scorer, so that was a nice development for them.
Yes. Yes, but it comes down to, you know, like 5-on-5, they were actually pretty good 5-on-5
okay.
this year.
Sabres were a little bit better.
They were 50%, like they were even Stevens across the board.
Right.
And shot attempts against, high danger chances, high dangers against, goals against, like they were basically very 50-50 across the board. But they were 27 in goals for and 28 in goals against. Why? Because the special teams were so bad that it brought everything down. But 5-on-5, they were a decent team. That is what Patrick Waugh and Matthew Darche have to hope continues. If you can go from 31st in PK and PP and move yourself up to 18th and 17th, all of a sudden, I think you get 10 more points. And I think you get to 92 and you're competing for a playoff spot.
Yeah, they ended up finishing the year 500 at 35, 35, and 12. But as I mentioned earlier, with a month remaining in the season, they were 2 points behind Montreal and 5 points behind Ottawa. Those two teams end up getting in. The Islanders won three of their final 14 games. It's not unreasonable. Like, imagine if they had won six. They would have missed the playoffs by like 3 points. Yeah. Like, it feels like they were nowhere close because of how poor the end of the year was, right?
They were six in a bad metropolitan division. When you look at the Metro, mm-hmm. I didn't feel like the Metro was good, but they were six in that division, which is not right. good.
Yeah. Well,
37, Duffer. That's the number, 37. Overtime or shutout losses for the New York Islanders over the last 3 years.
They have
more than any other. Actually tied with the San Jose Sharks, but they go to OT. Again, last year, 12, right? Overtime losses. That's a big number, but like 37 over the last 3 years.
And technically no one listed as president within their organizational ranks. When Darsh came in, he did get executive VP title. But there's nobody else listed as a VP or as a president. Obviously, they have longtime, NHL guy, business guy, John Collins, you know, operating as co-owner to, you know, John Ledecky. So I am curious whether they, you know, still fill that role. And then again, my belief is that's not going to have as much of an impact on the ice. It's just, you know, how do we see the Islanders differently? What does their profile become? You know, can they ever kind of get back to that level where they're, I don't know. It's a strange thing to say for a team that has made the playoffs a fair amount. But I just don't think a lot of people talk about the Islanders. And
they don't. You got the New York Rangers right there who are the polarizing Rangers. They were bad last year. We'll talk about them tomorrow. They were bad last year.
Oh, it's Chris Drury's birthday. We're not going to talk about them today?
Tomorrow. I haven't done my homework on them, so I'll do it tomorrow. We'll say happy birthday, Drew, and that's it. That's all you get today. Positive today, negative tomorrow. That's the way it goes.
Balance. It's our middle name on Sabres Live.
The Islanders are in a market where you got to be flashy to a certain extent, right? So, you know, the Islanders are right there to the Rangers. There's so much going on over there. Even that Metro, like the Devils, were on the other side of Manhattan. But the Devils are a team that have the
Hudson is the body of water you were looking for there.
Yeah, but like one is on the east side of Manhattan and one is on the west side of Manhattan.
No, when you mentioned the Devils is what I was saying.
And the other side of the Hudson. Other side of the Hudson. Yes. But I'm just saying, like, the Devils are
geography major over here. About. No.
Yeah. You know what?
Where is Ilya Sorokin? I don't mean geographically, physically.
I don't track him. I don't know.
Like, I think it would be a surprise to some who saw the Islanders from afar, saw them not make the playoffs. Would it not surprise some that he ended up sixth in Vezina voting?
No.
No? Like, no. Yeah, I know what his body of work is, but like, it wasn't like a, hey, here's a season to remember kind of 82-game run.
Oh. It wasn't a season to remember.
Of an indictment on goaltending across the league that he still ended up sixth because nobody
else.
He
still had a .907 save percentage, which is above average, right?
Meh.
It's a meh, but his goal save above expectation was a top eight, I think, top seven in the league. So he faced some good quality shots. I think the big question in the crease is where's Semyon Varlamov? He had knee surgery in December. Will he be ready? They signed David Redick, but it's been that Sorokin-Varlamov tandem for years now. Mm-hmm. You'll be intrigued and to find out. I had a long conversation with Shayna Goldman this morning because she's doing some stuff with The Athletic, and you know we're talking goalies. And I still have Ilya Sorokin. So the top four in the league right now, goaltending-wise, to me, are Hellebuck, Shesterkin, Vasilevsky, Bobrovsky. They're like, I feel like they're in a category to themselves, those four. The next guy on my list was Ilya Sorokin still. I still think Sorokin is the next group, right? You got the top four, the big four, and then Sorokin. He's along with guys like Ottinger and Allmark or whatnot, but he's the leader of that next pack.
Yeah, I would agree. He's better than Ottinger and Allmark, right?
Yes.
What number does he wear?
Sorokin is 30.
Yes. Look at you. We tried to prove yesterday.
Billy Varley is one, right? Semyon Varlamov may be one.
I didn't look at that. No, he's not. He's 40.
He's 40. Yes. He may have worn one before, maybe with the Washington Capitals or something.
Oh. You want to, do you remember some of the names that also played for them last year in the crease?
Yeah, they had a guy that got called up from the East Coast Hockey League last year.
Tristan Lennox.
Tristan Lennox, that's who it is, yeah.
Marcus Hogberg was there for a little bit, too.
Hogberg's a big goalie.
Huge goalie, yes.
So Varlamov was number one in Colorado and one with Washington.
They have a bigger one, though, listed on their roster. Henrik Tikkanen is 6'9", 204.
Yeah.
He's from Loja, Finland.
It was Eric Bolton's birthday over the weekend. I went and had a drink with him. We talked about it.
Is he still on the payroll with the
Islanders? Yeah, he's an amateur scout. Now, he went from the pro side to the basically covers the OHL and the region and whatnot. But he was talking about that big goaltender, and now he's like a massive. Mm-hmm. Right? But he moves well, too. Like, that's one of those. They were really excited about him. You're that tall. They don't move so well. Like, remember when Ivan Fedotov of the Flyers first made his first start with Philly, mm-hmm. and he stepped on the ice for his solo lap, and I'm like, the guy can't skate. Well, let's find out. He's having a tough time stopping pucks, too.
We will
too
get...
Harsh? Is that too harsh?
We're going to get to Philly eventually here. Yeah. How many days away? Not this week, obviously.
No, right? We still have a few before then, yes.
That's going to be fascinating. They're
what,
crease.
When we get to Philly, the crease? Yeah.
Because I don't think you love Dan Vladar, even though it was his birthday recently. Was it today or yesterday?
When are we today? We're Wednesday? Yeah, we may get to actually.
Dan Vladar is 28 today. That's why I had Philly on the brain.
Monday is the Flyers, but we won't do them probably because we're going to be at the Sabres alumni golf tournament. So it probably
won't be.
Next.
Oh, sorry, wrong tournament. Never mind.
Yeah, no, not that one. The alumni one. So we'll do the Flyers on Tuesday. We'll talk about Dan Vladar. But so Vladar's a birthday today. Nice.
28 today. Ivan is 23, and obviously gets special recognition because of his cool name. Sabres
Ivan
Hockey
Ivan
Fest.
Or Ivan or Ivan. Ivan. I think there's a lot of variations we can go with right
He's
there.
He's making room for Victor. That's all we know. Just to nestle him into his new spot in the forward ranks with Colorado. We want you to sign up for Hockey Fest today. It is the all-ages street hockey tournament in conjunction with Sabres Fan Fest taking place on September 13th. All skill levels are welcome. So visit sabres.com/hockeyfest to sign your team up today. Can't wait for that. Even if I can't keep track of the days and the events at which we will be in attendance. I think it's still the Islanders as team of the day. So if you have questions about them, hit us up at Sabres Live and we'll roll on after the break.
We're back with more of Sabres Live. Presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Which former teammate of yours, Marty Biron, scored at more than a 30-goal pace in his career against the New York Islanders, something that would never be attached to him based on his scoring pace against all others?
Oh, boy. I was the first name
you
that
could
came
hear
up
him
to
coming.
Mind. I can hear him coming, Jochen Hecht.
Yes.
Because the Blades. The first name that came to mind was Drew Stafford. When Staff scored enough to get there.
Yeah. Jochen scored like 15 times in 34 games against the Islanders.
You can hear him coming. People are going to say, why can you hear Yo-Yo coming? Because Jochen had the T-Blades. And if you don't know and remember what the T-Blades were, they were this German-engineered like hockey blades that were replaceable. Like right now, anybody that's in hockey knows that you press a button, the blade comes out, poof, you pop another one. But this was a plastic blade that you never would sharpen. When it was done, you threw it in the garbage. And there was metal on the inside, and it was like this very unique T-blade type of setup. But it was loud. It was loud. So yes. Dennis Seidenberg wore the T-Blade because he was another German player.
Yo-Yo also an Islander at one point.
Yeah. And Ron McLean, host of Hockey Night in Canada, would be a refereeing all these youth hockey games with the T-Blade and used to talk about them, I think, on every broadcast and how great they were. And that didn't last too long.
We are all guilty of that. Here we are again talking about T-Blades.
Did you have Ron McLean? Did you have, not Ron McLean, did you have T-Blades?
No, I'm just saying that we're guilty of beating a dead horse, so to speak. Like, we have our topics. Sometimes we just, we hammer them relentlessly, unnecessarily, repetitively. Do you know Rasmus Dahlin is the leading active point getter among Sabres against the Islanders? He's played New York 25 times. He has one goal.
Yeah.
He has 16 points total, and he had some magical moments against them last year, but the Islanders took 2 out of 3. And I feel like the Islanders often, like, have a little bit of an upper hand here in these head-to-head matchups. And after Dahlin, like, Tage Thompson has 8 points in 18 games against the Islanders. That makes it tough when your best players aren't getting close to a point a game. Like, Zach Benson, Yuri Kulik have been good in very small sample sizes, but even Alex Tuch has just 4 points in 11 games against the Islanders. And that kind of, you know, it speaks a lot to what you talk about often, like how good the Islanders, in a normal year, the Islanders are harder to score against. They have really good goaltending. But even just looking at those raw numbers, it kind of surprises me that Dahlin, Thompson, Tucker are that low in comparison to point of game status.
It does. And it comes back to, why do we think the Islanders are this boring team? And maybe it's because the way that the Sabres have played them over the last few years, it's never your top guys that have that big outburst of games. And you're like, I remember that game. Dahlin had 2 goals and an assist and the power play with Tage and Tuck and whatever. Like, it's kind of like, ugh.
Even though they blew them out this year.
Even when they won 7-1. And Duffer, I remember they won 7-1 because
you were there.
I was there. I was doing the game with Dan. And really, to be honest with you, it was one of those games where it was so insignificant in the way that the game happened. I don't even remember what happened. And I should, like, I'll go back to my notes and it will jar my memory. But I'm like, by halfway in the game, I feel like that game was over. It was like, just, you know, like, whatever. Like, it's fun. Let's enjoy it. I do remember, though, a couple of things. One is the Sabres had lost, what, the 13 in a row before then? Or like right about there. And at the morning skate, you know, Rasmus Dahlin was talking about missing some games, and he looked over to the media and he says, I hope I never have to miss another game. And then he knocked on wood next to him, like, you know, a little knock on wood, and that was good. And then I had one of those exchange with Lindy Ruff that morning, which was kind of funny. So Lindy saw me in the hallway and he goes, Marty, you want to put on the pads tonight? I'm like, oh, you're not going to win many games with me being in net right now. He goes, it's not like we're winning right now. I got to find something, right? So I'm like, well, it's not going to happen tonight. I guarantee you, if I dress tonight and I play, we're not winning. And then they go out and won 7-1. So I feel like the fact that I declined the invitation got them that win. That was the reason.
And Dahlin had 4 assists. That was a big reason why they were able to win that game 7-1. This year, the Sabres and Islanders again will meet 3 times, the first of which happens here in Buffalo at almost the same time of year. We're talking about that 7-1 route. This one is on December 20th at KeyBank Center. And even though we don't know this TV schedule yet, I have to assume this is an ESPN exclusive. It starts at 5 p.m.
I don't know. And really, the reason, because I thought maybe
this
is one of those.
It's a weekend game, right?
It's a Saturday game.
So it's not an ESPN, obviously.
No, because they do weekdays. And by that point, Saturdays are college footballs and, you know, all of that. But I was trying to figure out, why would it be a home Saturday 5 o'clock game? We've had some, but usually there's a reason, right? Either there's an open window at night for a national game, or in the afternoon for a national game, and you got to fit it in, or it's one of those days where everybody's playing and you're finding different. It's not one of them either.
No.
There's probably, what, 9 or 10 games that day of some early games. There's a couple 1 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 5 o'clock, 7, 10s, whatever. I don't mind it. I don't mind it for a Saturday night, 5 o'clock. I know I like the Saturday 7, but, you know, there's a lot of families that are going to be able to say, hey, Saturday before Christmas, right? It's December 20th. Yeah. Let's go to a Sabres game at 5. Let's bring the kids. Be out of there by 8:30. It all makes for a really fun weekend leading up to the holiday break.
Well, the Sabres hope to be out of there by 8:30 because they have a game the next day in New Jersey on that weekend. So it's back-to-back for them. It's a 7 p.m. start the next night in New Jersey. But the team of the day is the Islanders. Can Buffalo win the season series against them? Could that go a long ways to jumping over them in the standings, pushing them into the top eight, making the playoffs? The Islanders didn't make it last year. Patrick Roy was in his first full season after his relief appearance the year before. Saw them rattle off a really hot 10 games late in the year and got into the playoffs. And I think these questions are valid because, Marty, we asked it specifically early on in the year. I said, is Patrick Roy a good coach? Mm-hmm. And this is actually as tongue-in-cheek-ish as it can sound. It's a very hard question to answer often. Yes. No matter who we're talking about, because there's always so many factors that go into team success. But it's on the minds of our audience here on social, like is with a new GM, Matthew Darche comes in, Patrick was already in place. Like if the Islanders stumble for any number of reasons, you think Waugh's on the hot seat? Especially with a guy like Pete DeBoer sitting out there?
That's what Jonathan is asking on X right now. He's like, hey, is Patrick on any kind of hot seat? And so here's the interesting thing. If you have the debate about Patrick Roy, a goalie, what is the one common thing that people always say about Patrick? Probably the best playoff goalie ever, right?
It's not even close. Look at his win totals.
It's not even close.
It's not even close.
The argument is always, well, Dominik Hasek is probably the best goalie to ever play in the NHL. Some will say Patrick. Some will say Marty. I keep saying Marty was probably the best regular season guy, played 70 games often and has all the numbers and the longevity. Dom was, for me, the most dominant, and Patrick was the best playoff goalie ever. Mm-hmm. As a coach, Patrick Roy has only made the playoffs twice. He's never won a playoff round. He lost in 7 games. I believe that was to the Minnesota Wild after Matt Cook took out Tyson Barrie's knee in the first round, and that kind of sank the Colorado Avalanche. Barrie was their up-and-coming kind of Kale McCarr-ish defenseman in 2014 in the playoffs, and Cook was with Minnesota, hit him in the knee. He went down. They lost in 7, and then he made the playoffs with the Islanders, and they lost in 5. So he hasn't been able to find the recipe, number one, to be in the playoffs often because he's only been in the playoffs twice in 5 full seasons or 5 seasons as a head coach. This will only be year 6 for him in the National Hockey League. Feels like Patrick Roy has been there forever. It's been over 10 years since he appeared in the NHL, but it's only year 6 for him in the National Hockey League.
Just for the quick refresher, for those who don't have Waugh, Brodeur playoff numbers top of mind, Patrick, 151 playoff victories. Every player in the world would clamor to play in 150 playoff games.
Yeah.
Patrick played in 247, a record for goalies. He won 151 of them and ended with a .918 save percentage, 2.30 goals against, but obviously all the cups. And Marty Brodeur, 113 wins, so almost 40 behind, with 91 losses and a .919 save percentage in 202 and multi-cup winners. So,
but not even close to the same amount of games played either. He's what? He's about 80 games back?
42 game difference. They lost the same amount, but Patrick won.
Okay, so the wins, okay.
Yeah, like it's crazy, man. Like Patrick's winning percentage in the playoffs, 151 and 94.
Patrick came in the league
for the longest
86.
Time. Billy Smith was thought of as the money guy, and his numbers will still show that. I mean, Billy won 88 and lost only 36.
Yes.
Like you double that, that's even better than Patrick Roy, right?
Well, that helps when the Islanders won 19 consecutive series.
Mm-hmm.
They won 4 Stanley Cup and then went to the Stanley Cup the year after, losing to the Edmonton Oilers in 84, that is. But Patrick Roy came in 86 with the Montreal Canadiens when he won the Cup in 86. That's the year that the Oilers were going for a three-peat with Wayne Gretzky. They had lost to the Calgary Flames. Remember the Steve Smith goal behind the back of Grant Fuhr's leg, all of it.
Yep. Yep.
So Montreal and Patrick Roy in 86, then Patrick in 93. We know that was against the LA Kings and and Wayne Gretzky, the Marty McSorley. So there is, but he was dominant in 86. He was dominant in 93, all the overtime wins. And then two with Colorado, the one in 96, obviously, when he went in and got traded that year. Mm-hmm. He was dominant in the playoffs. But it, as a coach, that was the one thing I couldn't wait to see is Patrick as a coach in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Number one, we haven't seen that often because it's only happened twice, and he hasn't had the success. So maybe this year the Islanders are hoping that that comes through in year three with the Islanders.
Incredibly, though, there was a question. Is he on the hot seat?
I'm going to say no. I think this will be Matthew Darche's first year of evaluating everything. He may not start next year as the head coach, but I don't think that Patrick Roy is getting fired in season with the New York Islanders. I think we've got other coaches. We talked Nashville, you know, Andrew Brunette. You know, there's other coaches that are on the hot seat, but I don't think Patrick is.
Are you proud of me?
Yes, you didn't bring up any of my stats with the Islanders in this show so far, which is awesome.
Close. I did not bring up the fact that they were number one on faceoffs last year. By a lot. We're back after this. Birthdays, burgers, and more on Sabres Live.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Mentioned early in the show, Chris Drury turning 48 on this day as we delve into birthdays, another hockey birthday. Al Hamilton, remember Al's name came up recently when we did Oilers as
yes.
team of the day for Sabres and Oilers to have their numbers retired in Edmonton, and Al Hamilton was one of those. Robert Plant.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, for me, like Zeppelin is kind of the be-all and end-all as far as music influence, right? Like, everything funnels back to Zeppelin. And I was reminded of that this year when the movie Becoming Led Zeppelin came out, and I saw it, and it just was like, oh, I have clarity. I have clarity in my life as to why I listen and love everything that I do. Robert Plant is 77 today, and he's in Toronto November 10th at Massey Hall.
Duffer, this is interesting because when I was in school, like maybe fifth grade, sixth grade, some of the kids in, you know, we elementary school for us was up until sixth grade. And then we had a high school in seventh grade until 11th grade. Like, we didn't do a 12th grade. Don't ask me why, it's a long conversation, but you're getting older in the high school, in the school, in elementary school, in fifth and sixth grade. Now all of a sudden some kids are showing up with a Zeppelin t-shirt, and it's like, you know, you're 11, 12 years old. And the kids that were like, I don't want to say like onto the side, but they would listen to Zeppelin and you'd be like, what is this? I had no idea. And I came home one time and I'm like, hey, like, I'm telling my dad was into music and his yeah. family is into music. I'm like, who's like, have you ever heard of this Led Zeppelin group? He's like, I mean, my dad's like, yeah. And he pulls out these albums, right? He had the vinyl, he pulled out the albums, started playing them. And so I didn't know about Zeppelin until I was probably like 11, 12, 13 years old. And it was so significant. I'm still not a big, like, I'm not a huge Zeppelin, knowledge and all of that, but I can appreciate what they did.
And I got to them late as well, even though obviously at a young age, but I, you know, kind of gravitated to all the hair bands in the mid to late 80s.
I did too.
And then realized that all of them took their sound directly from Led Zeppelin. And then it became like this, oh, I get it. And then once you get into the catalog, you're like hooked for life. But anyway, maybe we'll save Fred Durst talk for tomorrow and why
he's 55 grades today.
7 through 11. What? Anyway, see you tomorrow.